Good morning. I'm Yingying Yuan, and I'm here today, I think, to sort of put this in a national context with some of the national data that are known from 2009, and then talk a little bit about the intersection between child protective services and public health. And then Melissa Limbrodowski from the Children's Bureau in HHS is going to pick up that theme and talk more about prevention efforts, primarily from the perspective of child welfare, but intersecting to prevention from other perspectives. And I think what you'll see is a sort of ongoing theme between Michael's, mine, and Melissa's presentation, that we certainly have gaps that we are struggling all, I think, to understand how to address them. And I think Michael's done a tremendous amount of work in Los Angeles County, which to most of us is the size larger than our own state. So it cannot be disregarded what they do, because they have a large, complex population, a large, complex governance or lack of governance in LA. And certainly any problem they face in LA, the rest of us will also face in our own communities, if perhaps not so extensive. I wanted to say that when we talk about child abuse and neglect, somewhat how Michael alluded to it, that it is an issue that is touched by many sectors of society. It touches not only individuals, but it touches major, major service groups, constituencies, and justice. And I think that is one of the things which is not the same in all aspects of public health. But law enforcement and the courts, not only from the reporting side but from the adjudication side, are critical components of child abuse and neglect. And for that reason, there is a tension between many health providers and child welfare, which is seen in some places, including LA. I was told that child welfare is an agent of the court. Some of us don't quite believe that, but it is certainly true that we have child welfare, we have public health, we have justice for sure, law enforcement and the courts, judicial system, and we have other service sectors. So, for example, substance abuse, neglect, or homelessness, all those fields also are influenced and related to our issue of child abuse. We put the issue of child fatalities as a subset because, of course, it is our most egregious example of child abuse and neglect, but also one that causes quite the highest amount of public concern. And so sometimes what is thought about child fatalities, then everybody approaches everything else at the same issue about child fatalities. But there are critical issues, which I'll bring up, that show the similarities and differences between the cases that result in fatalities and those that do not. The system that comes to child welfare is essentially a system that depends upon surveillance. Not perhaps surveillance in the terms of public health, but child welfare depends on reporters. Isn't an outreach program that is visiting everybody. It is depending upon reporters. They're both professional reporters and non-professional reporters. But those are people who are reporting what they consider may be cases of child abuse and neglect, and it is the department's, the CPS job, to make that formal distinction. I'll come to that a little bit more, whether the formal distinction is meaningful or not. But certainly, there are lots of cases that come, and I'm going to go through the flow and the numbers, which are truly rise to the issue of a public health issue. There is no doubt that the numbers alone convince people this is a public health issue. We screen them in, and we would screen them out, and then there are diverse routes that a case can take once it's screened in. This handout, which definitely cannot be seen on the screen, but is a handout, and there's some in the back if you don't have it, because the numbers are totally out of focus, but I do not know how to focus. So I just pretend, okay? But that handout will help you. But I'm going to run through this. And these are statistics that are reported in the Child Maltreatment 2009 report, which is an annual report supported by the Children's Bureau. 2010 will be out later this year, will be out by late November, early December. And the website for the location of this report is on the handout. So this is getting a little bit better resolution here. From big numbers, which are definitely big numbers, we have over 3 million referrals to CPS from the public, both professionals and non-professionals, of which it's estimated this is equal to 6 million children. So 6 million children are reported to child abuse and neglect as maybe being at risk or being victims of child abuse and neglect. It's a large number. Yes?
Is there any information on whether it's referred to a professional or not?
Yes, I'm coming to that.
Oh, great.
Coming to that. And whether, yeah, I'm coming to that, a couple of things.
Great, sorry.
Okay, now, the next big thing to understand is more than a third are screened out. Okay, more than a third. What does screen out mean? Screen out may mean that they are, that the reporter, remember they're a reporter, it's not the family. Sometimes families, but not very much, okay? Reporters are said, well, this is really an issue that you should contact the school because it's a truancy issue. Or this is an issue that you should contact public health, or you should contact mental health or homeless shelters or whatever, okay? But sometimes the reporter is not told what to do whatsoever. It's just that this is not an issue that concerns us, okay? So one of the things that we know about screen outs is that there are certainly risk factors floating around there. It may not rise to the level of the interest or the responsibility of child welfare, but there are certainly risk factors floating. Okay. Two-thirds get screened in. This has remained quite consistent for many, many years. Fluctuates a little bit in your own locality and by state, but more than 50% are getting screened in, which I would put down as right at the moment as a good news piece. Right? Good news. That's a good news. Okay. So 2 million families are receiving a CPS response, and there may be multiple children involved here. These are reports that are coming to the children themselves in a minute. And about only a fifth, though, rise to the level the CPS has said that child abuse and neglect has occurred or there is high risk of child abuse and neglect. Two-thirds, now we switch over, two-thirds are unsubstantiated. There are other responses that CPS can make also, and one which is up and coming and you may have in your own communities is called alternative response, or it's called family assessment response, or it's called differential response. Is a program that in probably about more than 20 states are exploring it or piloting, and at least 15, 16 have full programs running, where families no longer go through an investigation response. The objective is to assess the family, not make a determination necessarily, not rise to the level of declaring perpetrators or whether it's substantiated or not. These are, in general, what are classified as low-risk cases, in general. Okay. So the most egregious, for example, a child who has been burned or physically abused, an arm broken in the hospital, and they say this looks like this is not going this route. Okay. A neighbor calling or a teacher calling, child is not is coming to the school and it's awfully cold, and child is coming inappropriately addressed, might go that route. CPS has gone back and forth over the decades of whether it is trying to help families or it is trying to protect children. Now, you might think that those two are tightly linked, but they can move, don't you think? There is a continuum here of whether you're helping or whether you're protecting. And this is over a 100-year history in this country of this debate. Are we protecting or are we helping? Over 3 million children receive a response. That means that CPS has been involved directly with over 3 million children in the United States. This is, again, a big number, a big number. Of those children, about 700 are found to have been substantiated or have found to be victims, and nearly 3 million, okay, 2.8 million, are found not to have been victims. So those are duplicate counts. Probably unduplicated is around, obviously, around 2.2 million, something like that. Now, but you have to remember, too, that the family has already received governmental, at least inquiry, and investment in some time of time and contact with a governmental agency. So almost everybody I know will agree that these children are definitely vulnerable. They have risen to the level of investigation by the government. There are some that are totally ridiculous, but not very many. Now, it may not be that it rises to the level that there needs to be court intervention or that there needs to be other interventions, but nevertheless, children are at risk. There are issues with the families, issues the families need help with. May not be from child welfare, may be from another agency, but all studies that look at the difference between children who are found to be victims of child abuse and neglect and children who are not found, if it was a blind test, there would be many that people would misclassify. You agree? Right. And I would say that's probably not good news. I'm ready to say that it's a little bit bad news that we make these distinctions, but it is partially that we have laws and policy and the threat of investigation or intervention by the legal system is so high that we are increasingly raising the level of evidence that is needed to be declared a victim because the consequences are so extreme. A child may be removed. A person may become a perpetrator on a registry, may not be able to get a job related to any connection with children. So the consequences of the child welfare system finding that the child has been victimized is extremely high. Which may be a good news, or maybe bad news. Certainly it is good news in terms of cases where it is no doubt the family needs to have extreme interventions and children need to be removed. I am totally clear on that.
But everybody loses information.
Yes.
So if you get to the end and the case is screened out, if you added up the pieces and you said, why? Well, I couldn't read what it said.
Right.
Anyhow. And that would be bad news.
Yes, that's bad news. Right.
Can you just define duplicate children?
Yes.
Duplicate non-victims, what is that?
Right, okay. No, duplicate children, and these terminology means the child, many children are reported more than once.
Okay.
So when we counted non-victims, there are many children who are more than one. As I say, the estimate of unique non-victims, and that means they were never a victim, is probably about 2 million. Looking behind the data, we first asked the question, this was your question, a little bit about who reports child abuse and neglect, and professionals, which include teachers, social workers, sheriffs, et cetera, child welfare professionals, et cetera, have reported more than half. There's a handout in the back, which you may want to, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to point you out, but it's very hard to read the slide because of the resolution. Have reported more than half or about since 2005 and before that. So professionals, there's a slight increase in the percentage of professional reporting, but not, at one point we thought that the community would start reporting less, okay? But in terms of percentages, it's holding pretty steady. One of the interesting things, when you break down the professionals, okay, the largest percentages are from teachers and other educators, which I have to say probably does include school nurses. So if you were thinking school nurses as public health, and wait to hear my healthcare percentage, we could give them a little bit more, okay? 16% come from educators, about 16% come from law enforcement. In many communities, the first report, people do call the police, and then the police report into CPS. So that's probably a little bit inflated. It's actually coming elsewhere, and law enforcement's giving it to CPS because they're intermediary. Social services, about 11%. Unknown and anonymous reporters, around 13%. There are people who do not identify themselves. Healthcare professionals is only about 8%, okay? And this primarily includes the medical profession. So other healthcare professionals are certainly somewhat between social services and healthcare professionals, but is a low percentage, not the major contributors. And I think this was related to your point, Michael, about some of the ambivalence about reporting child abuse and neglect and getting the family involved with CPS. Mental health reporting about 4%. So, who are the victims by age? And this is very close to some of the things that Michael was saying. The under ones are a very high risk group. But what should not be forgotten is that child welfare is working and dealing with families with older children. So you see almost 20% children are between 8 and 11, about 18%, 12 and 15. These are not the very young, but the very young, the less than one, are certainly a very large percentage. And then if you look at the 1, 2s, and 3s, that's another 20%. So you have... You certainly have over a third are children with three and younger. When you compare these percentages to fatalities, you see that this is even more extreme. Okay, 46% of fatalities are children under one. 18% are between one and two. 10% about two and three. 6.5% between 3 and 4. So another 34% of fatalities are under 4, which means that 80% of children who die from a diagnosis, not a diagnosis, but a determination that child abuse and neglect contributed to that death is over 80%. So one of the things that I think in child welfare that we are very concerned about is who sees the children who are under 1? Well, the healthcare profession sees those children. School teachers don't see those children. Daycare sees some of them, but not all of them. The public sees them too. Okay. In terms of substantiation rates, which I think was where you were going, mandated reporters have higher substantiation rates, meaning that if a mandated reporter reported, it's more likely that that's going to be substantiated than a non-mandated reporter. Okay. However, the highest are law enforcement reports. Those are the highest. Teachers not very high. Social services a little higher. Michael also talked about race, and we look at race in two ways. We look at it in terms of rates per thousand and then the percentages, because they're certainly skewed. The largest percent of child abuse and neglect victims are white. However, that's a rate of 7.8. So those of you who have remember methods class, you know, the rate is the number per thousand children, and then the percentage is the total. The percentage is equal more than 100% because, this is not. Okay, these equal 100%. Sorry, I went off on that little track. That was bad news, Michael, that I got distracted there. Okay, so 22% are African American with a very high rate of 15 per thousand children. I think from a public health perspective, that's a pretty high, significant, pay attention kind of rate. Okay. Multiple race children are 12%. Pacific Islanders is 11%. American Indians, Native Americans is a very high percentage, and these are even higher when one looks at the younger children. So if one were to look at only children under 8, the rates are very high, even though they contribute a very small percentage to the national picture. When you look at fatalities, just to let you know, and we do rates and fatalities because fatalities are egregious but relatively rare, we look at it per 100,000, and the highest rates are, again, African Americans at 4 per 100,000, followed by multiple race at 2.3 per 100,000. Whites and American Indians are about 1.5 per 100,000. So what is interesting observation is actually that the American Indian rate of fatality drops significantly. Whether this is an issue of reporting, because we see them as high victimization, we see them at very low fatality rates. So that is something I don't know whether we've ever looked into. I can't quite remember anybody looking into that. But that is all the rest of things sort of hold up where you think they should be. but that is a big drop in the percentage, both the percentages and in the rates. Now, treatment types are certainly, all of you know that neglect is the largest proportion of causes of child abuse and neglect. I think all of you are familiar with that, and followed by physical abuse, okay? In terms of maltreatment of fatalities, this actually is about similar, about since this is the one where rates can be proportions are more than 100%. The interesting thing is that neglect is about about 66%, and physical abuse, of course, due to a death, it rises to almost 45%. So going on, what happens after they get involved with child abuse and neglect? Going back to the sheet in terms of services, we have here both children who are found to be victims and children who are found not to be victims. Both receive services. This is an interesting observation that we found in terms of CPS intervention. Both are being removed and both are receiving in-home services. Okay. percentage-wise, of course, less, but totally it's quite interesting. So we have 124,000 estimation of victims being removed, which is almost a third, okay? And we have 87,000 of non-victims being removed. And that is usually short-term during the investigation, shortly after, but it includes emergency removals of more than 24 hours. In terms of receiving in-home services, over 200,000 are estimated to receive in service. I think this is good news, right? The CPS is providing services, that the community is reaching out to families and children. I think that's a good news piece. And indeed, many of the children who are non-victims also receive services. So I think when we get to talking with Melissa's presentation, you will see these funding streams coming through are meeting the needs. Now, the bad news piece is, what about all of those who are not receiving services? What has happened to them? And the other bad news is that there are probably children who are not known to CPS, which was your point, and what is happening to them. But I'm today only responsible for talking about what is known to CPS. So the question is, like I was alluding to, is this the tip of the iceberg? Now, there are many, many people who talk about, they draw the iceberg, and depending on where they are that day, and whether they're talking to Michael or somebody else, right? The iceberg can look like this, or it can look like this. And what CPS known is inevitably the tip. This is probably true, but I would argue that it's not the tippy tip. I would argue it's somewhere in the middle. And this is confirmed a little bit by the NIST, the National Incidence Study of 2005, which was NIST 4. Those of you who respond. Knowledgeable about that report, found that of those, that they do a national study and then they estimate how much child abuse and neglect there is based on sentinels who are not necessarily reporting. These are all mandated reporters, and somehow they haven't reported these things to CPS. That's another bad news piece. That to a study, you'll say, give a description of a family and say, I think there's child abuse and neglect, but you know about the route of reporting, but you don't participate. And there are studies about that. Healthcare professionals somewhat reluctant, educators somewhat reluctant, and others somewhat reluctant. But NIST found, from their terminology, which is somewhat broader than many CPS agencies, about 45% of their estimate was known to CPS. And that probably is somewhere between 40 and 55 and somewhere. That probably is a bad news piece. Michael, okay, right? That we have a large sector of families who are not known to CPS. Other ways to look at it is there are estimates about 13 million children who are classified as in poverty, and while not every poor child is maltreated, we understand that there is a risk factor there, okay? Other risk factors, which are somewhat overlapping with Michael's thinking, is truancy is a high risk factor. The child may have been abused before they run. Runaways, throwaways, children who are not in school are definitely in a neglectful state. We understand that. drug abuse, alcohol abuse in the family. We know those numbers are very high. These are all risk factors, considered risk factors for children to be maltreated. Certainly, violence in the home, and then I would argue the violence in the neighborhood are certainly social factors that are definitely public health issues. Studies that have looked at self-reporting, the most recent one was a number of years ago, was about 7.5 million adults reported that they had been maltreated as children. What are the other routes? Now, if this is the tip of the iceberg, there might be good news that families are receiving other ways, services other ways, and even though not known to CPS. And this is, I think, an issue for public health. There may be some good news in there that protective factors, et cetera, are being worked. So social services, child care, health care, all public education, law enforcement, are all doing their part in addressing this issue. Whether, for example, the Rise in Communities discussion about curfews is certainly an area related to child abuse and neglect because of the whole concept of lack of supervision. 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds out at 2 o'clock in the morning, definitely a lack of supervision issue. So next steps, child abuse and neglect, child welfare as a field is, and I speak on behalf of all 60,000 professionals, right? I would say is willing to recognize this as a public health issue. I won't say uniformly, but when you brought up money, but I think it is beyond self-interest. I think that child welfare recognizes that it cannot meet the prevention agenda, which Melissa is discussing, without being closely coordinated with other fields. We cannot meet that on our own, given that we have a system which largely depends upon reporting. So how are we doing? We certainly, primary prevention is an area we can invest in, but it's not the core program. And certainly, Melissa will talk about some primary prevention efforts. Secondary, tertiary prevention, certainly. Tertiary, especially child welfare, has for years worked in that area. But I think in general that we recognize that the risks are broader than traditionally have been considered child welfare, and that we're beginning to understand a concept that there may be protective factors at work. So those of you who are working in the area of protective factors, this becomes the issue of can we maximize protective factors rather than solely working on minimizing risk factors. It's another two-sided coin. It's the same issue. You would think these two things are quite well sealed together. But interesting, those who work on protective factors are, not working so much on risk factors. So this is just the references, and you find them also on the handout. Our project officer is John Gaudiosi and at acf.hhs.gov. So if you were to have any other questions about that, those go there. Certainly, we are more than happy to answer questions, and you will find the reference to us on the handout and on the website. The annual report is this, and I think it is on the handout is the annual report, and you can find that there. So thank you very much.